What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and joining me on the line, I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Absolutely titillated from those two fantastic episodes.
Titillated? Ooh.
Yes, yes.
Someone's eager.
I'm bringing the Clyde Frazier verbiage today.
I like it. Iso Raj, how you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Those two episodes hit the spot.
All right, I need to ask you guys both a question. We all know that some of these episodes leaked online a little bit. You got episodes 3 and 8 already available. Did you guys watch it? Did you watch it literally?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no. The government's listening, so no.
The government.
I don't know what you're talking about, Peter.
Pulled that one back real quick, huh?
Yeah, I downloaded the episodes, but you know what? I like to let it marinate, so I waited till Sunday night to watch it live.
Wow, that's some discipline, man. I respect that. I ended up watching episode 3 early because we were doing stuff on Sunday night. So episode 3 I watched during the day, and then episode 4 I had to watch after everyone had already watched it. So, I don't know. I got a little bit early and a little bit late. It's not the same but as watching it live with everyone else, but you got to do what you got to do, right? So obviously we're talking about The Last Dance, or as I like to call it, the Traveling Cocaine Circus. We're just going to keep on doing our reactions, guys. And this week we got a doubleheader with pretty much Dennis Rodman's episode for episode 3 and then Phil Jackson's episode for episode 4, right? Pretty sure that's what we've established in this order. What did you guys think of the Rodman episode? Josh, did you learn anything new in this?
I mean, in terms of Rodman, not too much. I was pretty much aware of a lot of the stuff that happened in the episode. One of the key points that I wrote down was Jordan kissing Collins would be weird today. So what did you guys think would happen if that actually happened during a press conference now?
Well, Collins said to kiss and make up on camera.
Yeah, but imagine LeBron doing that to Coach Vogel, the reaction to that.
I mean, the closest thing would be Dwight and Stan Van Gundy in, what was it, in 2010? 2011?
They kissed?
No, they didn't kiss, but that was their making up on camera, right? Like, Dwight came into practice when Stan Van Gundy was with the media, and then he did the, oh, hey, coach, good to see you, I'm Dwight Howard, da, da, da. That would be the closest thing. Kind of weird still, nonetheless.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we had Barkley and that referee, I can't remember his name right now, but, you know, they kissed on the lips during the All-Star game. That was like 15 years ago. And then I think it was Magic and Isaiah used to kiss before the game too, so I just found that interesting. But in terms of Rodman, obviously the big thing with him was taking that 2-day sabbatical in Vegas.
It's a vacation, thank you very much.
Yes. That's what you want to call it.
Yeah, that's wild. Hold on, did you catch this part where they talked about how Rodman would study other players' shots and like the rotation that they took their shots? And then that's how he would be able to figure out where the ball was going to go. Like, that's crazy.
The best was him explaining kind of like in person, like, oh, yeah, so the ball bounces here and I'm going to grab it here. And it's like he was visualizing it like he was on something. It was interesting to see Rodman kind of like, we've all know that he's an eccentric character, but you could really see at some moments, like he wanted to be left alone. And especially early on in his years, like most people, or I didn't see that Rodman. I didn't see the Rodman that went to Southeastern Oklahoma University that started on the Pistons in his first couple of years. And to be honest, there was moments where he looked like he was a shy kid. And then obviously the Rodman that we all know on the Bulls was someone who's like the polar opposite of shy. But I thought the Rodman episode was good, but I wanted more. Like, I just wanted more crazy stories. I wanted more details, and the footage was great, but it left me a little like disappointed because I know there's more to it, and I wish they aired it out more.
So you wanted to see the 2-day orgy in Vegas?
Pretty much. And you know what? Like, I was so surprised to see Carmen Electra.
That was a good part. That's all I can say. Good for her.
Yeah, can we get to the part where Jordan claimed that he walked in on them inside the hotel room, and then that was debunked a day later by Yahoo?
I don't, like, they didn't actually say that they were still in Vegas. So I rewatched the episode today, and it basically said, yeah, you know, I had to go get them. But he didn't really say where he was or you know, he purposely said, I'm going to leave out who was in the bed or what was in the bedroom and then where it was. I just know I have to go get the guy. It's basically what he did.
Yeah, it's sort of insinuating, though, that he basically caught him and Carmen Electra and who knows who else inside of a bedroom, inside of a hotel room in Las Vegas.
Yo, Carmen Electra hiding on a sofa under sheets is also hilarious. Like, you know when you're a kid and you're like, oh, I'm going to hide from my parents, and you hide under a blanket thinking that you're flat? That's what I'm envisioning right now.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like if Jordan actually went there too, he wouldn't have just walked in there and walked out like he did with the cocaine party. I think he would have stayed.
You think he would have gone in on Carmen Electra?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Oh, man, Carmen Electra is getting a lot of pub right now. First time anyone's heard her name in like 20 years.
I'm sure she's loving it.
Yeah.
The best part too is you saw the footage of Dennis Rodman coming into the gym in like pajamas while everyone else is in their training gear, and like that was the opening scene, I think, where he was just like working out and he's wearing these black and red checkered pajamas, and you're like, what? Where the fuck did he come from? But one thing I kind of found hilarious too was that, does anybody remember how Gary Payton was in the documentary for like 20 seconds and his whole line was, he's just a fucked up person? Like, that was like his main thing to say, and that's it, that's all Gary Payton said.
Yeah, I've seen GP on TNT multiple times, and he's very short like that, but he gets his point across very quickly. He doesn't really speak in full sentences. He just makes his point and he swears during basically every single thing that he says, sort of like KG, but not as fluent, I guess.
Eloquent.
Yeah.
Not as fluent in swearing.
I think they're both fluently fine, but yeah, that was a weird, I totally forgot about GP being in this until you brought it up.
Yeah, and then yeah, like, Ron Harper had the one part too, right? He just had the one line where they were talking about Jordan's shot against Elo, and he was talking about how pissed at the Cavs head coach that he was for not putting him on MJ, and even MJ said that, you know, Harper played him the best out of anybody in that team, and then Harper was just like, ah, you're gonna put Elo on, all right, whatever, fuck that guy.
Hold on, did that part remind you of, remember when Larry Bird was playing and he said anytime that a coach put a white defender on him, he thought it was like the ultimate disrespect, that he would only be covered by black players? For some reason, that just like popped into my head immediately, and I was like, man, Harper's athleticism would have probably been really good against Jordan at that point.
Yeah, and that was pre-injury Harper too, when he was still averaging 22 points a game.
Yeah, and they're like the same height too, right? Mm-hmm. Harper and Jordan, yeah. Like 6'6"? Because, like, I rewatched that clip so many times, and Elo bit so hard on Jordan just cutting towards the ball. Like, so hard.
That shot was also impossible, though. Like, he actually defended it really well.
No, I agree, but it looked like he was a half step behind because he bit on it on the initial catch. Not after his two dribbles, but the first catch, he just caught him.
True, but I think that helped him, though, because once he caught up, he was able to get a hand up, and then Jordan had to readjust, double pump, and then he somehow still made the shot, which basically only he could do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Ron Harper would have stopped him.
Clearly. According to Harper,
what yes. could have been?
I want to talk about when he came back from Vegas for a second.
Okay.
So when he comes back to the practice, they like Phil Jackson basically puts them in a lap line essentially, and Michael Jordan basically said like he knew what Dennis Rodman was going to be able to do, and Rodman apparently lapped all the guys by like four rounds, so the guys had to run even more than they were expected to, and they were super pissed at that. I thought that was really interesting that, you know, Dennis Rodman going like a 3-day, you know, bender essentially, come back to practice with no sleep and still outrun everybody by far. Just shows how much energy he had even at age, I think he was 35 or 36 at the time.
Yeah, but I think it could have been a lot of amphetamines. Like, he could have been like drugged up, like he's going fight or flight and you know he's flying out there just because like all that adrenaline, and he probably crashed like crazy. But yeah, no, like I actually want to go back to Peter's point and Dennis Rodman and the rebounding. Like, I found it interesting too when he mentioned how they had Jordan and Pippen and Phil, but he doesn't think that they would win those last three championships without his contribution, because they didn't really have that inside presence, someone who could really lock down the team's big offensive threat down low. And Dennis Rodman in the whole picture of the Bulls. We remember him from being eccentric. We remember the haircuts, but he was a very good rebounder. And even Michael Jordan says, like, he was a really smart player. Like, he understood defense. Like, he studied it. And I don't want to make any comparisons, but, like, his effort on the defensive side of the ball, like, is probably, like, he's so one-sided defensively. It probably reminds me a little of, like, how Draymond's really a defensive player and, like, doesn't offer as much offensively. And a quick trivia fact, I'm not sure if you guys saw this because it aired when it was live.
Wow,
do you know how many games that do you know how many games that Dennis Rodman has had 20 rebounds and 0 points?
I'm gonna go with 20 times.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely double digits, like 12 to 15.
No, 0 points. 0 points. 0 points.
Zero.
He's done a lot of times. Lower. Like, he's gotten scoreless in a lot of games. I'm not sure if he had 20 rebounds most games, but
I know what I can count at least 3 times.
Yeah. Well, it's 7, and the next highest player has 2, and the next highest player, I'm just gonna ruin it for you guys. It's Marcus Wallace. Camby.
Damn it.
Ben Wallace. I mean, that's pretty.
Ben
good.
Wallace has to be on that list, though.
You think he's got one or two of those?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Rodman's a freak. I think they could have focused on his relationship with Chuck Daly just a bit more. I know they don't want to focus on his time with the Pistons because, you know, like, why would you? Because that's not going to, you know, bring people's eyes in. But his relationship with Chuck Daly was very, like, was very much a father figure to a son type of figure. You know what I mean? Like, Rodman would go over for Thanksgiving dinners and that kind of stuff. And that's when you saw Rodman at his, you know, Raj, what you said before, at his, like, younger, truest form before all this stuff hit him. And then as soon as, you know, he bit into the bad boys culture a bit more, he started drinking a bit more. And then as soon as Chuck Daly left Detroit, so did Rodman. And that's when everything went loose. So it seems that while he was playing, he needed that, like, authoritative male figure in his life just to essentially calm him down, or at least understand him to a certain degree.
Yeah, like, I remember that line where I think it was Chuck Daly said to one of the assistants, like, don't put a saddle on a Mustang.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, like, I don't think he was a Mustang. I think he was, like, a Lamborghini or something, and that, like, he was disguised as a Mustang because the Rodman we saw in the later years didn't look like the Rodman that, like, those first couple of years in Detroit. Like, it was funny, when I saw those old pictures of him, I couldn't help but see the resemblance between his face and Pascal Siakam's. Like, I don't know what it was, but it was just like, yeah, like, it just, like, I'll show you a picture or something, but, like, they just look so similar. I don't know why.
Josh, did you see this?
The picture?
Like, a resemblance between the two.
Not exactly, but I can't really imagine Rodman now without all the different hairstyles. So, you know, maybe it's just like face to face without the hair. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, damn. Thanks for your contribution, Josh. Oh, man. What did you guys think of seeing Craig Sager? That was nice.
Yeah, that was cool. Him giving him $20 for his fine. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It was just good to see Craig Sager again after so long.
And yeah, Craig has had some of the most iconic, you know, post-game interviews and moments. You know, it's like KG, Kobe. He just got along with everybody. So it's pretty cool to see that backstage footage.
Yeah.
And I like how they didn't really force it. It was just like a small, like, clip of him. And it was just like something small, but it just like, oh, yeah, like, he was a huge part of that era.
Yeah, it was very smooth.
And going back to the point with, you know, Chuck Daly and Dennis Rodman, I think that Phil Jackson sort of had a similar type of relationship with Dennis Rodman, where he just sort of understood what Dennis needed in order to play at his best on the court, which obviously involved that sabbatical, which basically no other coach, including Chuck Daly, would allow that, I think.
No, hell no.
Yeah, the fact that Phil Jackson allowed him to do that just shows, you know, how I can't really say forward thinking that was, even though it actually turned out to be a great thing for the Bulls, but it's definitely different, and that's, you know, something that Phil is known for.
Hold on, I got a couple of things to bring up here. So in 96, when they, or 95-96 season, when they bring Dennis Rodman in, Phil said that, and I quote, "Dennis and I have a Native American bond between us." Okay? So then you go into like his room of artifacts of like, you know, whatever. And then there's a picture of the Dalai Lama there. I'm like, yo, Phil, what are you talking about, man? Like, there's just so much going on in your mind right now. What is this? It just doesn't add up. What is this?
See, what this documentary should have done is shown the footage from Montana when Phil Jackson had a sabbatical with Dennis Rodman for 2 to 3 weeks in the summers. Because I'm sure that happened. Because they met in Montana, I think, when Rodman was a free agent, right? That's where they met, essentially.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, like, he probably brought him back there for, you know, the next few summers just to do what Phil Jackson does. Because Phil Jackson brought Joakim Noah there. I think in his second year with New York.
Yeah.
And then Noah's career just went down the drain. So makes you wonder what they're smoking out there.
Apparently Phil used to do a lot of acid in the 70s, so.
Yeah, getting into episode 4.
Yeah, we're skipping ahead a bit, but I forget who that was, but just throwing him completely under the bus, talking about all his business from the 70s.
I didn't know that Phil Jackson played for that long. I wasn't aware he played for 12 years.
Hey, Phil Jackson has 2 championships career for the New York Knicks. How about that?
His hair was wild back then.
I mean, it's not really that much different. He still had that beard.
Yeah, he looked like the prototypical hippie. Him and Bill Walton back in the day.
Just like 6'10" hippies.
Yeah. They probably spent a lot of time together too at like Grateful Dead concerts.
Jesus Christ. No, thank you, my friend. Also, I don't know if you guys saw this, but when... So Raj, you know how you brought up that clip of Rodman working out in his pajamas in like the weight room?
Yeah.
So Luke Longley was walking around in the background, and it looked like he had jump soles on or something. Remember jump soles?
Maybe. It was a different time back then.
Yeah. It was so wild. I was like...
He was probably like the first person with them, too.
Yeah. Luke Longley trying to get his hops up. Imagine that.
That did not work.
Trying to get that Air Jordan, probably.
Yeah, no kidding. Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. Super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What'd you guys think of Jerry Krause just sacking Doug Collins with Phil? Just like nice and subtly, barely mentioned in the documentary. I think Doug Collins said that he saw it coming a year in advance or something, but... Like, that was it. That's all the mention there was between this backstabbing and just in and out.
Yeah, that was a dirty move. And, like, if that didn't give you a kind of a warning sign of how Jerry Krause was, then what happened, I guess, 6 or 7 years later with Phil Jackson really not getting the plug, but basically being told that that was going to be his last season. It just shows you kind of what kind of character Jerry Krause was. And I don't know, like, I wish they went into a little more detail, because like they didn't really ask Phil Collins like, so like what really happened? Like, how did you feel? Like, obviously he was upset, but he just said, I saw it coming and no comment. Like, didn't want to really elaborate on that. And
I like how you combine their names right there. You call them Phil Collins. That was incredible.
Sorry, Doug Collins. Doug Collins.
I can feel it in the air tonight.
I mean, Doug Collins could feel it in the air a year before it happened, man.
Same with Phil Jackson with Tim Floyd.
True. Yeah, but that was really obvious.
I mean, he said it before the season started, right? Basically. Yeah.
Just like straight up.
Yeah.
Even if you go 82-0, you're not coming back. What a thing to say.
It was funny, too, because Doug Collins was... It seemed like he was taking credit for a lot of Michael Jordan's individual awards. Like, obviously, MVP, scoring champ, slam dunk competition, defensive player of the year. Like, those are individual awards. And, like, I'm not saying, like, he didn't play any role, but, like, it's not like you helped him get, like, to the championship, and that was the first time they made it over the hump. Like, I'm pretty sure Michael Jordan would have won that slam dunk contest without you, Doug Collins.
That seems to be a trend amongst like some head coaches, right? Because remember in, is either in episode one or episode two, when they were talking to Roy Williams, and Roy Williams was like, yeah, you know, I told Mike that everyone works hard, but if you want to be the best, you have to work extra hard or something like that. And Mike was like, oh, okay. And Roy Williams is like, yeah, I did that. Like, what do you mean? You didn't make Michael Jordan's work ethic. What are you talking about? It's a wild idea, man.
It was a bit off.
These coaches always want to be remembered for something. So if you can latch on to the greatest of all time, you know, they're going to do it.
I Doug Collins, single-handedly won Michael Jordan the slam dunk contest. What are you talking about, man? It's so weird.
I did enjoy how candid he was, though, in one of the press conferences after MJ hit that game-winning shot, where he described his play call right before it happened. And he just said, you know what? The play call was, everyone get the fuck out of the way and give the ball to Michael.
That was great. Imagine swearing in a post-game press conference now. You would never see that.
Different era.
Yeah. And he was like, and he was just in like sweats, too. That was the best part.
Yeah, like he was like soaked. Like whenever I saw like Doug Collins, all I could think about was he'd be perfect for Jimmy Butler because he would just put Jimmy with the third stringers automatically as part of the drill. And he was going to stack the practice against them. So, but no, I thought that was some cool, like, I haven't seen that footage of like Doug Collins, and he looked a lot younger than I've seen him look in the last like 5-10 years of him being in like covering the NBA. And I also thought one cool part about the different eras was really talking about the Jordan rules, like with the Pistons.
Yeah, I mean, if you see that guy going in there, you just hammer him. Don't let him get him off the ground, because can't stop him when he's in the air. So you just got to hit him before. Don't let him go baseline. Push him left. I mean, it's actually a lot of things that you just do now to any dominant player, right?
Minus the actual, like, physically beating them.
Yeah,
minus that part, yeah.
I don't know. I sort of disagree with that, because, like, most right-handed players, when they go left to shoot a jump shot, right? Whereas, you know, Michael Jordan was complete opposite. His like, patented move was going right and shooting over the left shoulder.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
They forced him left because he wasn't really one to pull up left. When he was driving left, he would just go straight to the basket back then anyway. And then as he got older, losing some athleticism, then he added, you know, obviously shooting the pull-up jumper more often, going left. He already had that in his game, obviously, but he would shoot more so over the right shoulder if he's taking his fade away. So I just found that interesting.
That might have been like the product of the times, you know what I mean? Like if you were pulling left, you were gonna drive either way. You know what I mean? Because if he's going left, then and you're just gonna just swarm the paint against him, then it's pretty easy. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, if this is like a straight strategy, then sure. But I think most players back then, even now, like, you know, just thinking about your own game, if you're a right-handed player, most of the time it's way more comfortable to you know, go to your left and shoot, dribbling with your left hand and then pulling it up from there. So MJ was a whole different beast.
Yeah, that's true. What'd you think of your boy Sam Smith's cameo, Josh?
It was interesting, I guess. I'm not a big fan of him, obviously, just because he said some, you know, mistruths in the past, especially regarding the Bulls and MJ. He just liked to stir shit up. But, you know, he brought up some different interesting points throughout the episodes, so it was entertaining.
That part with MJ calling out each of the beat writers and saying, yeah, I already took care of you, I took care of you, and now I got yours. That was pretty cool. Shows I like petty MJ.
Yeah, and the fact that he had a game-winning shot the way he did in that game in order to, you know, win that series and, you know, obviously crush Sam Smith in that situation was hilarious.
To crush Sam Smith. All right. I think this is probably going to be one of the more controversial parts of these episodes, I guess, or at least for one fan base. What did you guys think of Isaiah Thomas trying to defend himself, saying that the 87 Celtics walked off the floor just like the Pistons did to the Bulls? You know what I mean? No handshakes, none of that. Just straight up, well, we're out of here. We got beat. I'm done.
He keeps changing his reasoning because, and I think it was in 2013-14, there's a clip going around today from Open Court the famous NBA show, NBA TV show with like Ernie Johnson as the host, and he brings in a bunch of different NBA superstars from now and the past to talk about different topics. And back then, in 2013 or 14, Isaiah Thomas was saying, you know what, I would do the exact same thing again. So he just keeps changing his tune. And the fact that, you know, they made MJ watch his response, and MJ called out what he was going to say before he even said it. And he just called him, basically a fucking liar.
Yeah, he backpedaled hard, eh? He says that, you know, if I knew this would have lasted for 30 years, I wouldn't have done it. I would have just sat there and shook their hands.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of revisionist history from Isaiah Thomas. And obviously he could have been that player in taking over from Bird and Magic, but he had a couple of good years. And then Jordan really like took that mantle from him and ran with it. And I think it's just a lot of bitterness like in the situation. Like I get why Jordan was pissed off, but I think the fact that Isaiah Thomas is really trying to like play it off like he didn't know what he was doing and he was innocent and still trying to be like the public's favorite, I think that's what really bothers Jordan. And to add to Josh's point, I think instead of calling him a fucking liar, I think he's really calling Isaiah being like a fuck.
Damn, Raj, that was harsh. I mean, he just called him an asshole. What?
I'm not. Yeah, but I don't know. I think that there is the different level of respect now, but I also think maybe the way that the Pistons beat up the Bulls, and then the first time like the Bulls did it back to them, like you got to give them credit. And especially if we saw in the clips that Jordan actually went out of his way, and he was one of the best players, if not the best player at the time. And when the Pistons beat them, he went out of his way to shake their hands, right, and congratulate them. So like you kind of have to return the favor and just have that respect of his competitors. Like you don't got to kiss his ass, but you can say like, you got us this time, like good job, and just walk off the court then.
Yeah, I don't mind it though. Obviously, I'm a Detroit guy, so
yeah.
My narrative is a little different, but I don't mind it. You know, you buy into what your character is, and for the bad boy Pistons, I mean, this is just in line with who they were. That's it. I don't think he should be backpedaling. You know, just I did what I did. I thought it was the right move at the time, and that's it. What else do you want me to say?
If he said that now and probably stuck with that stance over the last like 30 years, I think A, this would be not big news. And second, I think Michael Jordan would respect Isaiah Thomas a lot more instead of trying to play the media favorite.
Yeah, it's because Isaiah's so used to being loved, man. He's always happy and shit.
I love how dressed up he was for the little snippet. Like you see Michael Jordan rocking like a classic blue Jordan shirt and some jeans. And then Isaiah's wearing like a three-piece suit because he knows he's going to be on camera for this documentary and he wants to look damn good.
That's just how Isaiah is, man. He's always dressed up. Just a well-put-together guy.
Always looking dapper.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice how during the Lakers series, like the finals, obviously, originally it was Magic or it was Jordan on Magic, and then eventually they were like, no, put Pippen on this guy. It's the exact same thing that they did against Tony Kukoc in the Olympics in 92. First it was Jordan and then Pippen, and then they would just rotate, just wearing the guy absolutely down. And obviously the Lakers lost then.
One thing they didn't bring up though is that Magic was sort of giving Jordan the business in the first game. And even a little bit in the second game, I believe. And then when Pippen went on him and, you know, picked him up full court, that tired Magic out. You can see the different clips of where, like, Pippen would just tap the ball away, frustrating Magic Johnson, being really physical with him. So Jordan wasn't the best matchup in that situation, which they didn't really cover too much because, for obvious reasons, since it is a Jordan documentary. But this goes to show you that Pippen might have been, like, a little bit above Jordan back then anyway.
Defensively.
In terms of defense, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Pippen was a better defender, though. Is there?
I think a lot of people would argue that fact just because of like the aura of MJ.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Pippen has size, length, speed. He has everything that you would want out of like the ideal defender. I mean, what else?
Yeah, I think Pippen can guard 1 through 5, like easy, whereas in Jordan is really limited to like 1 through 3, like maybe a very small 4, but at the time everyone was playing big. Pippen really had the size over Jordan.
Yeah,
and the strength.
Especially with Magic as like a 6'8", 6'9" point guard?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious to see how Jordan was getting bodied nonstop, basically. Anyways, you guys got anything else? Any final notes?
Yeah, I actually have one small thing. I love playing a little game instead of like, where's Waldo? I always find Ahmad Rashad in random clips throughout the documentary series. Like,
yeah,
like 1 second cameos, and I've seen him in all 4 episodes, I think.
Where was he in these?
I think he's MJ's best friend, right?
At that time he was, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember him being in one of the locker room scenes, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like when it goes to the authorized Bulls personnel only, you just see Ahmad Rashad chilling there, and they mention him when they're on the plane.
Oh, yeah. Was that, I think that was Judd Bushler with the video camera saying he's not as rich as Ahmad Rashad. That was pretty good.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
The other thing that caught my eye is in episode 4 when they started talking about Phil Jackson and the start of his coaching career, and he started up in Cuevas Diaz, where they mentioned that the mayor, where he was located, shot an opposing coach in the leg, and then fans would bleed out a chicken and spread blood on the opposing team's bench. So I'm sure after going through all that, Phil Jackson was pretty happy to get back to the States to become an assistant coach at the time.
Yeah, no big deal. Just a little bit of chicken blood on the bench. You can wipe that off.
Man, can you imagine going through like different cities and wondering whether or not you're going to get out of there? Oof.
Sounds a lot like Daryl Wong after he won that championship, right?
Yeah, there you go. Shouts to him.
In Ecuador, I think.
Full circle, guys.
Westbrook still sucks.
Okay, thanks. Jordan Brand athlete, no big deal.
Speaking of being terrible at something, Jerry Krause dancing on the plane.
Yo, that was amazing. That was incredible, man. What a happy
It's a great moment. Go, Jerry!
Yeah, yo, he was living it up. And that was when they were still boys. Come on, man. Let the man have his
life. At the end of the clip, though, didn't somebody talk shit about him? He's, I think it was Pippen, right? At the end of the clip, he's like, all right, now get the fuck out of here.
Oh, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, stop.
Somebody said that. Might have been Harper.
Just get the hell out of here.
Yeah. They're actually cheering him on, and by the end of it, when he was done dancing, they're just like, all right, time to go.
All right, that's grounds for a rewatch. I need to see this part again. Mainly just to watch Jerry Krause dancing.
That's going to be a meme forever.
Oh, for sure. All right. We're going to be doing these Traveling Cocaine Circus podcasts every week until The Last Dance documentary is fully aired. So please remember, rate and subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms. We're on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.